Welcome back to Consider This. Melissa and Sharad here with you this evening. Now, a few days ago on the show, we spoke about how four pieces of artwork by the acclaimed artist Ahmad Fuad Osman had been removed from his exhibition at the National Art Gallery, or better known as Balai Seni. Now, subsequently, there had been considerable backlash to Balai Seni's move, including a letter written by Deputy Tourism Minister Muhammad Bakhtiar Wan Chik to the Visual Arts Development Board. The latest news on this, according to the Malaysian Insight, is that Balai Seni has yet to reinstall the four artworks despite the gallery's board of directors meeting today. Now, joining us on the line to discuss this further, we have Kathy Rowland, Managing Editor of ArtsEquator.com, which is an online magazine on arts and culture. Kathy, thanks for joining us this evening. Now, you wrote an article on this matter titled Art Censorship. At the end of the day, this is not new. Now, I'm just wondering, how have you interpreted the Deputy Minister's intervention?
I think that he's doing his job, right? He is the minister, he's the Deputy Minister in charge of culture and the arts, and that is absolutely his right to step in when there is an issue like this, one that is of public concern, one that raises questions about accountability and transparency, and one that absolutely calls into question the role and responsibilities of the National Gallery.
Kathy, in your article, you also note a kind of a history that the Balais had in terms of censoring artworks. Could you give us a sense of what you see as a common features, the underlying foundations of this practice of censoring works that often find that they're up first before they're taken down?
Yeah, so I think, if I could just sum it up, I think it's reactive and it's unilateral and it's retroactive. And what I mean by that is in the three cases that I mentioned in my article, and they span over 22 years. So the first that I mentioned was 1993, and then the most recent being Fuad's case. And you see that what's common in all of these cases, more or less, is the fact that the works are up, and which immediately will tell us that the works and the exhibition has already been through a process of negotiation with the gallery, with the curators. So it's been through a kind of informal and formal vetting already. It's made public, the members of the public watch to see the work, it's written up in the press, and then what happens is you might have a lone voice, and it can be a member of the public, or in this case, a board member, who then voices some kind of concern. And what I think then happens is a unilateral decision is made on the part of the curator, the gallery. We're not really sure where the power structures lie, but the works are then removed. So it really raises a couple of questions. It raises the question of, who is Balai accountable to? What is the process of staging work, number one, and then what becomes the justification to remove the work? And so that's consistent with all the cases that I raised in my article.
Well, Kathy, we had Ahmad Fuad go use social media to talk about this. Now, I'm just wondering whether it's unusual for artists to go public with perhaps if they are faced with censorship, for collectors to demand a return of the artwork still on display for a public petition, as we've seen in this case. Is that common practice?
So we've had a number of firsts in this case, right? So one, yes, it is very unusual because I think, and I've said this before, that censorship silences twice, right? So first, you have the work of art removed, whether it's a performance or an exhibition. But the second silencing then happens when the art makers are compelled to be silent about it. Often there's a fear of reprisal, there's a fear that if they speak out about censorship, it's going to jeopardize future relationships with these institutions. So yes, what did was extremely unusual because not only was he public, but he was very detailed. It was a very nuanced, unemotional recounting of the steps that had happened that led to the work and his conversation with Balai. So in a way, what he did was he brought transparency to the act of censorship, which is always shrouded in secrecy. So that's one. And I think that what's also important to note in this case is the community's response, because when Fuad went public on social media with it, it immediately enables the arts community to gather and respond in a very concrete way. Because this was not rumor, these were not whispers that were happening behind the scenes, but I heard this and I heard that, which is rife in any art scene. So when he did that, immediately what happened was then a group of Malaysian artists got together and crafted an open letter, which was very strongly worded, but I think was very principled as well. And up to close to 400 people signed it in a very short time. And the letter was then directed to the Ministry of Culture as well as to Balai, asking with a very specific list of demands in support of Fuad. So that's the second thing that's quite unprecedented, because if you look at the history of censorship in Malaysia, very often it's when these things have happened with theatre, for example, there is somehow some kind of a coalition force that happens with the performing arts community that, you know, these kinds of letters of support are not uncommon. But, and I may be wrong with this, but I really can't remember when it was a specifically visual arts community that wrote to the National Art Gallery about, demanding that a work be reinstated. And the third thing I just want to quickly, sorry.
Let me just jump in there with the response of Balai itself. The director came out and put out a public statement suggesting that they did everything by the book. That in fact, that they represent and their decision pulled the work out was actually good practice. Now, for a public that does not know how curatorship works and so on and so forth, how do we make an assessment? Was it in fact good practice to pull something out midway saying, well, this is just part of an endless negotiation?
I've never heard that, you know. I mean, I don't think that any institution that wants to present itself as international, which clearly Balai Seni Lukis, Seni Visual Negara wants to do, would put that in a written statement. I think it's highly unusual. I think it's fair to say that there are negotiations all the time, and Fuad alludes to that in his open comment as well, that yes, he understands that there are sensitivities and that there is always a process of negotiation before the exhibition is set up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we can accept that. But what is unusual here is that the exhibition was on for 3 months and Balai then extended it. And towards the end of the exhibition then proceeds to remove the work. So then as a public, we need to ask, what about the public that viewed the work over those 3 months? What about the public that actually has experienced the work and supported the work and has not reacted to it? This is a retrospective. So none of this work is new. It's been part circulating within the art ecosystem and the public ecosystem for the past 30 years. So I kind of find that argument quite specious.
Right. Kathy, you've also asserted in your article that Balai's prestige may have diminished over the past few years due to the lack of leadership and resources. Can you explain what you meant by that?
I think that, you know, it's a question of leadership, right? And it's not, I don't want to pinpoint only Balai. I think I just want to talk really about cultural leadership in general in the institutions that we have in Southeast Asia, whether it's in Malaysia or in Singapore or in Thailand. Really, this idea of who our leadership are and the kind of vision and integrity that they bring to governing the arts is a question that we really need to ask. And I think that was what I was trying to bring about in that mention about Balai.
Yeah, help us understand the difference between the role of the director, perhaps the people who manage the Balai on a daily basis, versus the board. Because it seems that the decision or the desire to censor this work came from the board. Could you help us understand this particular dynamic?
Okay, so in general, again, I'll speak in general terms, because boards of charities and boards of organizations that deal in public goods, which is what the arts are, right? It's a public good, such as the National Art Gallery, National Theatre. The boards of these kinds of organizations generally are meant to deal with issues of governance of the institution. So, you know, making sure, for example, that there are no conflicts of interest, that fiduciary duties are very important for a board to oversight. To the best of my knowledge, boards don't get involved in the operations of these institutions, and often it's quite important to have a separation. between that. I will say, though, that from just doing a little bit of background checks, the National Visual Arts Development Board Act was launched in 2011, and that seems to have created, have empowered the board with some powers. But I think what this situation illustrates is that we as cultural practitioners really need to educate ourselves about the legal frameworks of our institutions, because then it puts us in a stronger position then to challenge these institutions, because we understand the governing structures and we understand the people behind them. So that's, I think, on us to educate ourselves.
Kathy, we're out of time, but I just want to end by asking you to answer the question that you posed a bit earlier. And very quickly, who is Balai accountable to?
Balai is accountable to the public.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for speaking
with
us.
And the artists, obviously.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with us. We're going to be back with more on Consider This. Stay tuned.